IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We're so glad to be with you today. We're deep into winter where we are.
And Linda, you're sounding pretty chipper and pretty cheerful for a gal that had knee surgery yesterday.
Well, you know, your knees are kind of important to you. I'm a little slow today, but I don't have to walk to make the new radio show. So that was fun, or a fun podcast.
Let me ask you the question, you listeners. What does the word senior mean to you? What are the implications of the word senior? That's what we're going to get into today, because we've got some real concerns about that word and what it implies and what it should imply. And there's a lot of concerns connected to it in our minds, and we're going to tell you about those. And if you're not a senior, listen anyway, because the problem lies with all of us, or the opportunity, depending on how you look at it. But before we get to that, Linda, go ahead. You were saying, you know, I mean, I'm proud of you. You're very bold and brave. You endured your little scope surgery pretty well, and the orthopedist found some little bits of cartilage hanging around in your knee, and he got them out. And so we're thinking that within a week or few or so, you're going to be running again.
That's not what he said, but I'll do my best. Oh, wow. We're grateful for good doctors. We've had lots of doctor appointments. Speaking of senior, I used to go to the doctor once a year, maybe.
If you were forced.
Actually, until after all of our kids were born, I only went to the hospital one other time, except for to have babies. So, but that was nine times. So that was
Linda grew up on a farm in Idaho, and the doctor was something you avoided at all costs, and went only under duress. And you know, my philosophy, and I will say ours because we've adopted it as we become seniors, to use the word we're going to get into in a minute. We've decided that might as well take the offense, check everything, find out what's going on. Don't ever be surprised, blah, blah, blah. And we do have some wonderful doctors that we're really grateful for. And we keep telling them we want another 20 years. And so do whatever it takes. And we talk them into telling us that we're really only, you know, 55 or 60 physiologically. Forget about how many years we've been on the earth. And so you go.
Well, you're doing really well. We're headed for another tennis tournament this week, next week, in Phoenix, the last one of the year.
Well, my joints are good. And
your joints are really good.
We've all got some worries about our organs. I mean, what does it come down to? Joints, organs, and
tissue,
and skin.
Skin, yeah. Anyway, we won't dwell on that, but for those of you who are getting to the senior ages, we welcome you today, especially because we're going to have some fun things to talk about.
Well, and we're going into Christmas, and we know a lot of you are just too busy to even listen to this podcast, so put it off if you need to, but if you want to think with us about the dilemma, I'm going to call it the dilemma of seniors, or the dilemma of the word senior. It's a mixed bag, you know. In some countries, senior, well, and in the corporate world, if you're a vice president, or if you're a commentator, or if you're an analyst, or whatever you are, you want to be a senior analyst or a senior commentator or a senior vice president, because it supposedly adds status and gravitas to your title. But when you talk about seniors in the general vernacular in the public sphere, it's almost a put down. And so you brought up tennis, Linda. Tennis players, apparently the USTA doesn't want to use the word anymore. The senior divisions are not called senior divisions anymore. You know what they're called?
What?
Masters.
Oh, that's
Masters
that's, oh
division. God. Well, why is it better? I mean, why has senior, especially in America, become a kind of a word to be avoided. No one wants to be a senior. No one wants to be thought of as a senior. And if you are a senior in so many cases, and we're basing this on our own experience, we speak to a lot of senior groups and a lot of grandparents. And I'm telling you, there are a lot of people who are really not that old from our perspective, who are in their mid-60s or their 70s, and they feel like they've been put out to pasture. They feel like they're irrelevant. They feel like no one listens to them anymore because they're old. And they feel, in many cases, like it should be just the opposite. The reason you should be listening to me is because I'm old. I've had experience.
Right.
I can keep you from having to rediscover the wheel. Now, in some countries, as all of you know, we travel a lot and we meet a lot of people around the world. And I would say, generally speaking, in Asia, but particularly in Japan and particularly in certain other countries, the senior person in the family is the title of the greatest honor. Most families live in at least three generations in the same home, and the one who has the ultimate decision seems to be the, well, to be honest, it's the grandma. It's the grandmother.
Yes.
Ooh, that receives the most honor of all.
I'll never forget being in a home, a beautiful home in Saudi Arabia. And it was, I think, Jeddah. And honestly, it was a gathering. They invited us for dinner, but the master of the house was the grandmother. And she kind of ran the roost. And often those kids, they live, when they marry into a family, they move into the family house. I mean, often it's amazing.
They move into the house of the young married mother of the husband.
The mother of the husband is the ruler.
Yeah.
And in many cases, that works out just beautifully. But in many cases, it's a scary thing for a young bride, because this is not a do whatever you want mother figure. It is really interesting that the seniors are so revered throughout the world, and China, of course, also. But it really is interesting, because sometimes we feel in the U.S. that we're kind of put out to pasture at 65. I used to be worried about my mom and dad when they turned 65. I thought they were so old, so old. And interestingly, they had very few physical issues. They were both, as you mentioned, farm families.
Well, and we're not adjusting with the times. I mean, the reality today is that people live much, much longer. And we were with our good friend the other day, who's a doctor, and he said, you know, physiologically, it's not just a saying. 80 really is the new 60. 80-year-olds today are in as good a shape and have as much life left on the actuarial tables as someone who was 60 did a generation ago. So the question is, here's another way to look at it. As the average age gets older and older, and as we have more and more quote unquote seniors, we have this other trend going on with high tech and with a lot of segments of our society where people over 40 are not even trusted. A lot of these companies are run by such young people, and that the tech savvy and knowledge exists with younger generations. And you find companies that don't have anyone in their management that's over 40 or over 45. And they're fine with that, because they feel like they're the ones that know and are in charge. The problem we see is that there's a kind of wisdom and a kind of experience and a kind of knowledge that every company, every institution, every church really needs. And that exists with older people. And are we okay as a society and as a culture in sort of ignoring that segment of our population?
Yeah, I don't know. I, for one, have really loved getting older until this year.
Put a brake on it.
Man, there just seems like something. In fact, you should probably know that when we wake up in the morning, we roll over and say, "What hurts on you today?" Because we do have little hurts and things going on.
That's okay. What we're going to really worry is when we wake up in the morning and look at each other and say, "What doesn't hurt on you this morning?"
Or who are you?
Or who are you?
Anyway, it's a great time. I love this age when I used to, maybe 15 years ago, I used to wake up every morning thinking, oh, my kids are all up going. They've been going since 6 a.m., getting their kids ready for school and getting things organized and doing so many things. And I'm just waking up and I felt guilty about that for a while. But really, I don't feel guilty anymore. I love it. I love it. Although we still have a lot of early mornings, but not every day, and always going after it with what kid needs what and so on and so on. But I think you'll agree. I assume that many of you are older, some of you are younger, but if you are younger, you've got a lot to look forward to.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you're a 30-something or a 20-something or a 40-something and you're saying, well, this is not the episode for me to listen to, rethink that, because this is a societal problem and it's a family problem. It's a concern within families. It's a question of how are you relating to your parents who are now seniors, and how are your kids relating to them, and how do we integrate and bring together the synergy that exists when three generations or even four work together within a family. So stay tuned. We're going to explore this from several angles. We're going to explore it from the question of demographic winter and how we've got this inverted pyramid now, where the older ages are proliferating. There are more and more seniors, more and more people over 65, over 70, over 75, over 80 than ever before. And many of them are not working and adding to the economy. And the way our Social Security works is those who are working, the younger people, basically support the needs on Social Security and Medicare and other things of seniors. And if the top, if you think of a pyramid and you flip it upside down, and the base of the pyramid, which is the upper ages, is now growing, and we're having a lower and lower birth rate. So the smaller part of the point of the pyramid that's below is getting smaller. It doesn't take a mathematical genius to realize that that's not going to work very well, where the needs and the spending for seniors is getting higher and higher, and the income that's feeding into the Social Security or the Medicare, and even the population of younger people is declining. What does that do? So we want to look a little at that. We want to talk about, from a church standpoint, from a religious standpoint, the senior people are the trunk that connects the branches of the tree with the roots, that connects the young people, those who are growing up with their ancestors. And if we lose that or don't value it, we've got a real problem. The whole culture itself, if it becomes so youth-oriented that we avoid aging in every way and try to cover it up and have a lot of work done and try to pretend we're young when we're not, because that's what everyone thinks is ideal, we've got to somehow add to it. So just there's a personal note, and then we'll take a break in a minute after Linda concludes here. But, you know, our motto for what we've done with parenting and with our books and with other things that we've tried to do, our motto has always been fortify families by celebrating commitment, popularizing parenting, validating values, and bolstering balance. So there's a lot of alliteration, right? We're now adding one more, and we're going to explain it a little in the second half. Glorifying grandparenting. We need to elevate the idea of who seniors are, who grandparents are, and how incredibly valuable they are to our families, to our towns, to our cities, to our cultures, to our religious institutions, to everything.
Right. We've been talking about this lately, and we think that the seniors, of course, they're doing so much better, especially in our church right now. They're really putting seniors to work, but there's so many that aren't doing anything. They don't realize what the possibilities are. So we'll give you some ideas. Hang on, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back talking about getting old.
Is that what we're talking about? I thought we were talking about sort of an academic theoretical subject called seniors.
No.
You're taking this personally.
As I sit here with this great big huge brace on one leg, I can't bend it. I can't go up and down stairs, only one step at a time. But, you know, this is temporary, and we're so grateful for the little temporary problems, because we know a lot of people are in a lot worse trouble and really in a sad situation. So we are ever grateful for our health, our bodies, and our crystallized learning. Who wrote that book about
crystallized? Arthur Brooks.
Arthur Brooks, yes. He said, you know, as you get older, you think that you're just getting older, but you're not. You have so much information in your head.
You have different kinds of intelligence.
Crystallizing because of all the experience you've had in life. And some experiences are hard, but that's okay. That's what we learn from our hard.
You may lose a little fluid intelligence, he says. You know,
right.
Being able to do calculations quickly in your head, or being able to, I don't think that's, people lose that, but you know, just able to, you know, sit down and take the SAT test or whatever. But you're this other kind of intelligence that hinges on experience and wisdom and memory and so on is really there. Memory's an issue for some. But I mean, on a personal level, before we get to some of the other thoughts, Linda, I do think it's interesting. If you picture in your mind a spectrum, and on the left, far on the left, is juniors, for want of a better word, and on the right is seniors. You know, clearly the people on the left who are junior, who are younger, are going to be, their physical bodies are going to be better. They're going to be able to run faster. They're going to have less wrinkles. They're going to look more beautiful in a swimsuit, blah, 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 on and on. But now over on the right-hand side, I mean, you know, we often talk in terms of the five facets of life: physical, mental, emotional, social, and spiritual. And I think you can make a pretty strong case that the physical is better in a younger person, but I think you make a strong case that all four of the others become better and are better and are more reliable, and we need to use and tap in and use them on the right end of the spectrum, on the senior spectrum. You're mentally, you've had so much more experience. You've had so much more life that you've lived, and you've stored up what you've learned from all of it. Socially, you're far more adept as a senior. You've learned how to empathize and be with other people and understand them and so on. Emotionally, I think oftentimes we settle in our emotional patterns. We sort of know that it's okay to be up and down, and we understand the cycles of emotion, and we deal with them better than we did when we were younger and more junior. And spiritual, most important of all, there's no question in my mind that people mature spiritually much later in life. So there, juniors, we got you on 4 out of 5.
Right. It's exciting to go into each phase of life. Wow, our kids are also now involved in so many things, and with kids and Children for Children concerts and things that recitals and all that, which we all went through in our age. But now just think how fun it is to just go listen to a recital and not have to practice with that child hour after hour after hour. They come up with amazing things, and it's just so nice to be able to really soak that in as an adult and as we get older.
One of the interesting things is we live in a culture today that's more aware of diversity and more laudatory of a diversity than ever before. We want racial diversity. We want ethnic diversity. We want all kinds of diversity in our institutions. And that's good because it integrates us and we become stronger as a culture and a society. But are we including age diversity? Should a company or a ward or a club or a school, anything we talk about as an institution, should there be more attention paid to age diversity? Are we using the wisdom of some senior people? There's nothing cooler than to see, you know, in our family, we call it Generation 3, our grandkids interacting with Generation 1, us, without going through Generation 2, the parents. That direct contact between juniors and seniors is so powerful and so beneficial. So do we have age diversity and should we think more about it?
Well, we're at a point where we do have a lot of grandchildren, but they are just doing such fun things. Of course, somebody's always in trouble. Somebody's always this and that. And we've got a senior in high school whose parents are so worried about her future. She has some special needs and is such a beautiful girl. But wow, she's going to have a rocky road ahead for a while as she graduates from high school and enters the big world.
And how much better a family's prepared to deal with all these issues when there's two generations coordinating and working on it, the parents and the grandparents. We're actually, I'm just going to let a little thing slip out of the bag here, Linda. We're talking to BYU and others about rebranding this podcast a little bit after 15 years. We're just thinking about it. And a lot of you love the title, Ayers on the Road, and we do talk a lot about travel. But we're thinking maybe a subtitle, something like Emptiness Parenting and Grandparenting, because not enough thought is going into that, not enough discussion, not enough emphasis either by parents or grandparents on coordinating the two.
Right. I know a lot of you who are listening, and we always wish we could just have a conversation with you. We could get your feedback, and because it's be so interesting to know where you are in life right now. But it is always so interesting to combine with other grandparents and talk about the issues that need to be done and do the things that we've talked so much about, the fun we've been having with our grandchildren. And we have a nice variety. Many of you have more than we do. Many of you are not grandparents yet, probably. But we guarantee it is one of the most fun things. I'm just sitting here looking at my telephone, my new telephone case. I have an 11-year-old. We have an 11-year-old granddaughter who noticed that my
I'm always saying, don't give her your phone, Linda.
My old case, but I give it to her and then she, Grammy, you really need a new case. Let's go online. Let's go to Amazon and get you one right now. So we did, and it just came in the mail. And she also has fixed, I gave my phone. She doesn't have a phone. She's 11. She's not going to have a phone until
for
high
a while because her parents are pretty
adamant. She just said high school the other day, her mom. Anyway, but she just said to me last summer, give me your watch for 5 minutes. She set up the cutest thing you've ever seen, a little, what would you call that?
It's a little sort of a avatar of
it's
her.
It's an avatar of her. It looks exactly like her. She wakes up with me every morning. She's blinking at me right now. She smiles. She winks. She gets closer and farther away. And so that I just have her with me all the time. She did that in 5 minutes. How in the world did these kids?
Well, that's an 11-year-old. I remember the time you loaned your phone to the twins when they were like six, and they came up and said, Grammy, I'm very sorry, but I think I deleted some of your stuff on your phone.
Oh, man. But they are such a delight. But that's the case where, you know, you kind of have to work through the parents. But it's just so fun for me to really delve into these kids' personalities. What are they really like? What makes them tick? What are they running? We had Thanksgiving here last week, as we talked about last week, but I just woke up this morning thinking, our grandchildren, their favorite thing to do when they come in my house is put their hands on the windows. And I was just looking at that this morning. There's little fingerprints all over the windows on the sides of the doors. And I love it. It just reminds me that they were
love it here. As you clean it off.
Right. They were here and it was great.
Well, I feel like we want to, for the last couple of minutes here, go even a little deeper and talk about how, you know, culturally within our country, within our church, within our communities, I'm going to say that our greatest unused asset is seniors. We need to find more ways to incorporate the wisdom and the knowledge and the power and the altruism of seniors in government, in communities, and in the church. You say the church is doing pretty well. Our church, the LDS Church, it is remarkable how many seniors go on a mission or work in the temple or do their family history. But that's not enough. They also want to be more relevant within their families and with their grandchildren. And they also want to pass on. And yeah, I mean, they are the trunk. They are the link. And as since we live in a society that's moving forward faster and faster, things are changing. AI, you won't know AI a year from now. It'll be so much more advanced than it is now. So everything's moving so fast. Isn't that even more of a reason to hang on to our link to the past, not only culturally, but in our families? And isn't it the grandparents and the great-grandparents who really connect us to our ancestors, not only by doing the genealogy and doing temple work and so on for them, but just by maintaining those stories and passing them on? And then, Linda, even in, I mean, one of the things we talk a lot about, we had a good friend once who was very philosophical. He's still our friend, although we don't see him as often as we'd like to now. And he said, you know, and this is when we were much younger. We were, I think, probably in our early 60s. And he said one day, are you appreciating, are you grateful enough for the process of growing old? He said, growing old, in fact, he said, dying will happen only once to us in eternity. There are many births. We're born into mortality. We're born through baptism. Yeah. We're born, we believe we were born spiritually in a premortal life. I imagine I wrote a book once called The Birth We Call Death. So even our death, in a way, is a birth into the afterlife. So there's many, many births. There's only one death, one growing old, one time when we are deteriorating rather than growing. And my point is that that's a wonderful time if we embrace it, if we use it, not only we as individuals, but the society around us, the church around us, and so on.
I will never forget being in church one day with our dear friend, Larry Stevens, who we admired so much for our whole lives. He was such a mentor to us. And he had Parkinson's. He was bent over a walker, couldn't even look, stand up and look at me. He had to look at me from the side. And I said, Larry, how are you today? And he said, oh, Linda, I am loving today because you only get one chance to grow old in your entire life. And what I'm really embracing it. Yeah.
So I hope this starts you thinking and wondering a little about some of these things, irrespective of what age you are now. What should we be doing as families, as churches, as communities, as cultures, as a society, as a country? What should we be doing to use this enormous asset of our growing senior population? How do we tap into all that wisdom and experience and ability and desire to be relevant? How do we tap into that? And if we are among those that are the subject matter here, the seniors, let's think of ourselves as the masters instead.
Let's adopt the
terminology of the tennis association. Let's make it mean that when we hear the word senior, let's think master.
Let's do, even if it's just the master of recovering from knee surgery. So thanks for joining us today. We hope we've given you some things to think about and think about with us. We appreciate your listening in, and we'll see you next time on Irish on the Road. Bye-bye.